back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Our mission is to bring you great interviews with preppers from around the world so you can be better informed and better prepared for everything from a hurricane to the end of the world as we know it.
KDArmor.com is your one-stop shop for the most affordable body armor period. With packages starting at $169.99 and free shipping on every order, KD offers soft armor and rifle threat rated armor up to level 4. Go to KDArmor.com and get your body armor today while you still can. Mention this ad and receive a free tactical scarf for a limited time with any body armor package. That's CATIArmor.com.
Whether it's a grid down situation or just a temporary power outage from a storm, a sun oven will allow you to harness the power of the sun. Not only will you conserve resources, you'll maintain operational security by not sending up smoke. You can cook or dehydrate just about anything, including bread, muffins, roasts, jerky, beans, rice, and so much more. Go to sunoven.com/prepperrecon for an $80 discount off a deluxe package.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Cal Wilson, Christian prepper and patriot and author of two books on prepping, Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping and The Camouflage Cross, Tales of Christian Preppers in the End Times. But we're not here to talk about my books on prepping. We're here to talk about this great new book on prepping called The 7-Step Survival Plan by David Kobler and Mark Goodwin. And let me read to you the bio in the book here. David Kobler is a U.S. Army veteran who served in Iraq. Thank you for your service, by the way. He's creator of the popular Southern Prepper One YouTube channel, which provides tons of free information on a full range of preparedness topics. Visitors to the Southern Prepper One YouTube channel can learn about everything from tactical training and communications to long-term food storage and homesteading. David's easy-to-understand instructions are delivered via videos produced from his own retreat property located deep in the hills of South Carolina. David was an expert advisor for National Geographic's Doomsday Preppers and speaks at survival and preparedness conferences around the country. David is a long-term prepper who has a passion for educating others on how to prepare for whatever may come. So welcome, David, to the Today's Survival Podcast.
Thank you.
Mark Goodwin is a Christian constitutional author and the host of the Prepper Recon Podcast, which features interviews of patriots, preppers, and economists each week on PrepperRecon.com. And I know for a fact he has some excellent, excellent guests there. I might have been a guest myself. Mark holds a degree in accounting and closely monitors macroeconomic conditions to stay up to date with the ongoing global financial meltdown. The troubling trends in the political and financial landscape have prompted Mark to conduct extensive research within the area of preparedness. In his popular prepper fiction novels, he weaves his knowledge of economics, politics, prepping, and survival into an action-packed tapestry of fast-paced post-apocalyptic fiction. So welcome, Mark, to the show.
Cal, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Eager to talk about this great book, The 7-Step Survival Plan. And this is a great little book. It's a real treasure trove of useful prepper info. I'd say not only for beginners, but also for intermediate preppers and expert preppers alike. There's a lot of good information in this book. And first off, I wanted to ask David regarding your involvement with the Doomsday Prepper show. I found that to be a very educational show. Is it still on the air?
I don't know if they have another season coming. I only helped for the first two seasons, and then after that I left it. It was getting a little bit crazy. I enjoy watching crazy, but it was getting a little bit too far out there for me and the average person.
Okay. Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. I was just curious about, if, you know, I don't know if you know, what motivates the guests to go on that show? I mean, being a prepper is kind of inherently a secret thing, and people go onto that show and you know, show off their whole storehouses. And it kind of, it always made me scratch my head to see that.
Yes. A lot of those preppers, you know, have their own little widget or gadget they're trying to sell or their book. So for them, it's an excellent opportunity to get national attention to push their product or their company. So some have done it, you know, to help their business.
Yes.
Some have helped it just to spread the word about prepping. And then some have just wanted to be on TV, you know, the honest truth.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a mixture of what people want.
Yeah, even the ones who claim to be confidential, just in the background you can see a landmark or something that would kind of point the way to where their place is located. I don't know. I found it a very educational show. It's very informative.
Yes, it will. It will show you things that you're not thinking of. So it'll give you ideas that you might not be able to afford what some are doing, but you can take the idea and do it however you can afford it. So yes,
yeah.
It's excellent for learning.
I think so too. Yeah. Okay. Back to the 7-step survival plan. Here's my idea, and I thought I'd kind of throw this out, and you guys can, you know, let me know how you feel. Personally, my family and I are prepping for bigger disasters and longer-term disasters, but I think that will also cover the smaller stuff that has a higher likelihood of happening. Like, for example, just in our household here, just in the last year and a half, you know, there was one time we were evacuated for a fire, and that was 4 days, I think. And then we've had power outages that have lasted 2 to 3 days at a time. Anyway, as far as what to prepare for, I think it's a good idea to prepare for more involved stuff, but knowing full well that the smaller stuff is more likely to happen. David, what do you think?
Definitely. I try not to guess what can happen. I just try to be a prepared American. So whatever is thrown at me, from an ice storm to, you know, bad weather to an economic collapse, you know, I'm prepared for it. I just want to be totally a well-rounded prepper.
Yeah, I think so. Mark, are we on the same page as far as that goes?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we could say the zombie apocalypse might not have a very likelihood of happening, but there's folks out there prepping for it, you know? And if they've got deep food larders and they've thought about security and they've thought about home defense and they've thought about how they're going to get water and what they're going to do when they can't leave their house, guess what? If a hurricane comes through their town and they're in that situation, they're going to be ready for the hurricane because they were prepping for a zombie apocalypse. So while it's probably not really a rational fear or a rational thing to prep for, folks that are prepping for that are going to be in a lot better situation than the folks that didn't even think it was worthwhile to go get a couple extra gallons of water.
Yep, I totally agree. Hey, regarding the book, there are a lot of really good expert and intermediate prepper books out on the market. And I think this book here that you've both co-authored is kind of geared towards the more beginner prepper. What's your thinking in producing a beginning prepper book, David?
I mean, a lot of people are just getting started. You know, every day people are waking up. So, you know, they could be overwhelmed. So with this, you just basically follow the book and check the boxes and cover the bases. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are doing a lot more prepping, and they might have forgotten something. So this is a good time for them to slow down, stop, read the book, and then realize, hey, I am covering everything. Or, well, maybe I'm a little bit lacking in something, so they can get that category caught up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a lot in this book that even can educate intermediates and more seasoned preppers. Mark, what are your thoughts on a beginner prepper book?
Yeah, we did. And it's like David said, it's very overwhelming, especially, you know, we've got a lot of secular economists and we've got a lot of people like Jonathan Kahn and Mark Biltz that are seeing things that from the biblical cycles of the Shemitah, the 7-year cycle, and the things associated with the blood moons and things like that. And there's a lot of folks that are very, very apprehensive about what could be happening this fall. And sort of tongue in cheek, I've got a Shemitah ticker up on Prepper Recon now that shows how many days you've got until Shemitah. And, you know, yes, it's a little lighthearted and fun, but on the other side, it's got a lot of impact for me personally, because I'm looking at that ticker as saying, when that thing hits zero, I want to make sure that I've got all my basic levels of preparedness covered. So if something catastrophic happens, we're ready. And if not, you know what? I'm just going to keep going, and I'm going to keep prepping and getting ready for the next level. But it's like David said, and it's very overwhelming. And when you see all of the myriad of things that you need to do, it's just what you end up doing is you end up freezing and doing nothing. So we wanted to give folks a book that they could say, okay, where am I going to start? And they can open this book and they can see, oh, well, the first thing we need to do is focus on body, mind, and soul, because you're your number one survival tool, you know. And if you don't have that down, all the beans, bullets, and band-aids in the world aren't gonna help you if you're not in good enough shape to get up off the couch. And we saw that this past winter when people were just keeling over with heart attacks. When they were having to shovel snow off their roofs, because in the Northeast they got pounded early with snow and people's roofs were collapsing. You know, you got to be in some type of physical condition to be able to get up on your roof with a shovel and scoop the snow off of it before it collapses. So, David, we want to make sure that we get the right starting point for folks as well.
Yeah, David made the point on a recent podcast that people in the military can sustain some serious injuries, but if their bodies were in good enough shape to begin with, they're more able to snap back pretty quickly just by being in good shape.
Definitely.
You know?
I've seen it firsthand, and it's a proven fact. So get in shape, and that injury that you might sustain, you'll be able to bounce back quicker. And you might live through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to say, this book, I consider myself kind of an intermediate. I don't think I'm an expert by any means, but the margins of this book in where you'd had that chapter on the bug out bag are totally marked up, because there's a lot of new information here on bug out bags, especially. And anyway, I thought that was good. I'm gonna put a lot of this stuff in our family fleet cars. You know, the multi-tools, the extra water, the toolkit, the window breaker. All that's very helpful information that you guys have in this chapter on bug out bags. And speaking of where to start bug out bags, at the beginning of that chapter, there was some talk about the gray man concept as far as bug out bags. David, can you tell us what you guys had in mind when you were talking about the gray man concept?
The gray man concept is you want to blend in with what other people look like. So, you know, if you're the only one in camouflage and everyone else is wearing blue jeans and a t-shirt, you're going to stick out. By sticking out, you're going to be looked at a little bit more closer by other people, and then definitely law enforcement is going to look at you. So you want to blend in. So instead of wearing camouflage, maybe you can wear some brown cargo pants that are pretty normal looking, and it won't draw any undue attention to you.
Mm-hmm. And that goes, I wrote that in my book about cars as well, that it's tempting to have, you know, a car or a truck, you know, painted camo, but you're more likely to be ignored, you know, when it's just dark green or black, stuff like that. Mark, are we about right on that gray man concept?
Yeah, absolutely. You want to fit into whatever your environment is. You know, if you live in Texas, you know, boots and a cowboy hat. But boots and a cowboy hat, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb in New York City.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to somebody starting off on a bug out bag, that's where this comes into play. In other words, you need to, you know, if you decide to get a backpack, whether it's more involved or more simple, just keep it pretty typical, where you just blend in. You're not going to attract attention.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out jmbullion.com today.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
And also, there was some discussion in your book about the dual use, the idea of dual use items to keep in your car or bug out bag. David, what can you tell our listeners what you were talking about there?
Yeah, any item that you can use for multiple purposes, you know, it is a great thing you need to have, because it's going to be heavy enough. So if you can find something that will cover and do job A and B, it's going to be lighter for you. And that's the key. A lot of people put too much stuff in their bag, and it's too heavy. So you have to find that happy medium where you have what you need, but you are also very mobile. And for some people, especially for bugging out, they might be going from their work to their home, and they're going to need a very lightweight bag so they can travel quicker. Now, if you're leaving your house for good, then you're going to need to carry a little bit more stuff with you, because, you know, that's all you have.
Yeah, one example that you had in the book was something to keep in the car that would have, I guess it's a multi-tool, which would have not only a knife but some pliers and a little something that could cut safety belts if needed, or something to smash a window in case somebody's stuck in a car that's, I don't know, caught on fire or going into the water or something. I think that was a great example. Mark, what do you, are we about right on this?
Yeah, Columbia River Knife and Tool, they make a great little pocket knife, and it's just, it's got the carbon handle and a nice blade with the tanto tip and the serrated part in the back, so you have the different types of cutting options on it. And then at the bottom of it, it's got the glass breaker, and then it's got a seatbelt cutter on it as well. And it's a great knife to just for your everyday carry. And then if it's already on you, then you know you've got it. If you ever have an accident in the car and you need to get out, and the power windows won't go down, and your seatbelt stuck, and you can't get it undone, and you just went over a bridge into a river, it might be a great thing to have. So, or if you get into a situation where you see a car and it's overturned, and maybe you know, it's in peril of catching on fire, I think that if it's on fire, David's the fireman, so he can probably tell you whether or not you want to actually attempt a rescue in a vehicle that's already on fire. But if it's not, you know, maybe you can break out the window and cut the seatbelt and get them out of there before the fire starts.
Yep, we've got one of those. I don't know if it's the same thing, but we've got one of those in each of our glove compartments of our cars. And all it took for me was watching a documentary on Chappaquiddick. I don't mean to get political necessarily, but that poor woman apparently had survived in that car just for a few minutes after it, you know, drove off into the river there. And after I saw that documentary, I thought, I never want to be without a way to get out. You know, if a car goes into a river or lake or whatever, and you can't operate the windows, and it's slowly filling up with water, you need to be able to get out. So I thought that was really cool to have that in the book here. Hey, David, you were being in the military, you've probably eaten a lot of MREs, and I've bought a few myself, and I have to admit I'm some of them are not that don't taste that great, but I'm surprised at how good some of the MREs taste, like the spaghetti and some of the chili and so forth. And your book talks about MREs versus energy bars. Can you talk about your feelings of which one would you prefer and which one is easiest to accumulate for the beginner?
I like them both. So to really pick one, I like a balance of all kinds of stuff in your bug out bag, because the MREs, some of them taste great, some of them don't taste as good. So really pick out what you like to eat. But in a worst case crisis, I've eaten all of them and then get the job done. They sustain you. But if you have kids, that's where you need to make sure you have exactly what the, if you got a 5-year-old and he doesn't like a certain thing, he's not going to eat it. And that's not going to be good for you, because it's going to add stress to the family if Junior's not going to eat. So figure out what they like to eat. So sample some of your MREs, any type of energy bar, sample it beforehand. Make sure you like that kind. But if I had to bug out and all I had was one thing, it would get old very quickly. So put multiple things in there, even beef jerky, just so you have you're not just getting tired of one same thing.
Yeah. Well, I noticed in the book there was some talk of just canned spaghettis and ravioli, and I think that was this book, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought that was interesting because, in a way, those foods are kind of civilian MREs. I mean, that's something that civilians buy all the time in the grocery store, and a lot of times they wind up in a pantry for years on end, and at some point they get eaten when somebody would rather eat something else, but it's almost an emergency thing. And I think that's... in this book. One other thing, Mark, you... there was some discussion in the book about canning food. And first thing I noticed about canning when our family started canning is that it doesn't involve cans. They should maybe call it jarring or something. But anyway, it's still, I think it's very important for a prepper to have some canned food that you've done yourself, so that you know that it's pretty universally germ-free. Anyway, Mark, could you explain canning to our listeners, please?
Sure. Canning's a great way to preserve meat, especially if you're anticipating having to go without power for any amount of time. Freezers and all of that are great, and probably a lot more more economical and probably more convenient. But when you lose power, you lose all of that stuff. So canning's a great way to do it. One of the things we can is turkeys, because you can get those at Thanksgiving for like 69 cents a pound. And, we usually get one for Thanksgiving, and then we usually get two more to can. And another thing we like to can is pork shoulders, because we like mojo pork to eat with our beans and rice, because we store a lot of rice and beans, because it's a very low price food item to store that stores very well. Rice will store for about 20 years, and beans, depending on what kind, can store for 6 to 8 years. And so we like the mojo pork to eat with that, and it's just basically pork with a little bit of bitter orange, which if you don't have that in your area, because that's kind of like a place that's something that's very specific to South Florida, and I don't know if they sell that across the rest of the country, you can use grapefruit juice instead of that, and garlic and onions and a little salt and pepper, and you cook that in a slow cooker, and it's just fantastic. So you take that meat with the juice that cooks out of it, you put it in your jar, you leave about a quarter inch at the top or half inch at the top, and you put on a new lid and you put your ring on, not too tight. All canners are going to come up with directions when you get them, unless you get one from eBay or a yard sale or something like that. But most of them, you're going to cook your meat in a quart jar. It's going to be cooked for 75 minutes, and you're going to bring it up to 10 pounds of pressure. So you're not going to be able to do this in just a regular water bath canner. You have to have a pressure canner for meat or any kind of a low acid food, like beans, anything that doesn't have enough acid to fight off botulism. You're putting yourself at risk if you can it without the pressure canner. And it's 10 pounds for 75 minutes will usually take care of that risk.
Okay, and the general idea of canning is you get this kind of aluminum, made of aluminum kind of big pot, and there are ways to screw the lid onto it, and you put water in there and these quart jars that you can buy at Walmart and fill up the jars with food and then kind of boil it for how long was it again?
75 minutes once you get it up to the 10 pounds of pressure. So you got to bring it up to pressure first, and then you start your timer.
And then you leave these lids on there. Mm-hmm. And the lids, I think, are good only for one use, unless you use, I think the brand is called Tadler.
Well, I've not had very good experience with the Tadlers. We've got some of those, and we had we tried it with our pork, and we tried it with our turkey, and I want to say about 25% of them did not hold their seal. When you take the band off of a metal, and I don't know what the problem is with those, but I think it's because the metal one, when it seals, it'll pop and it'll suck down, and the negative air pressure in there is actually holding that lid on. And I think that the Tattlers, I think that they don't pop like that metal lid does. And I think that it's just not giving you the type of seal that you really need. There may be folks that have different experiences with them. Maybe they leave the band on all the time. But in my mind, if it's not sealed enough to stay on there without that band, then I don't trust it. So we'll use those for like just kind of general storage and stuff. We didn't throw them away because, you know, you can always find a use for stuff, but we do not use those for canning at all anymore because we just don't trust them.
Interesting. Okay. Very interesting. Well, that sounds like an experiment for my family to try pretty soon, you know?
Yeah.
I guess as far as canning, I can say this, that if you're in a situation where the power goes out, or it's some kind of extended disaster where you're trying to live off of like emergency food. In my experience, canning is a way of getting real good home-cooked meals just stored in a jar, like in the back of your pantry. And if you're without power, there's always a way you can, you know, light up the barbecue grill out back or wherever. And you open up one of these canned meals, and it's just like a regular home cooked meal. It's not an energy bar or whatever, you know. So
yeah,
I think canning is a great thing, and I'm glad our family's doing it.
And we've just switched over to all wide mouth jars now. And our next canning projects, we're gonna try making meatloaf in the can.
Yeah, good. I think we've tried that in the past. I'm getting the thumbs up. Yes, we have, actually. Yes, the wife says that we have done that. We've also gotten donated to us some of the old narrow mouth jars from somebody who wants to go to the wide mouth, and we're going to put those to good use as well. Hey, Mark, was there a time of the year that is good for sales on the pork shoulder and the turkey, like you said?
Well, turkeys, yeah, at Thanksgiving, and that's when they come out for, you know, 69 cents or 99 cents a pound. I guess we'll see what happens this year with the drought and your way and all of that. But and the bird flu, yeah. So we might not get those prices this year. But that's typically, you know, some of the prices you've been able to see. Pork shoulders, it's just kind of whenever you can catch them.
Yep. Okay. All right. Let me. Very cool. Let me change gears here on something. Bob Main, who has Today's Survival, had a podcast last December where he really poured out his heart on his personal cancer issues, and I'm happy to say that he was diagnosed later as being cancer-free. But he made a good point in that podcast that it's not only prepping for disasters, it's prepping for possible personal emergencies and personal medical issues. And I noticed from this book that, Mark, you have, I didn't know this about you, that you have an arthritis issue. And David, I saw your YouTube video on this fire truck that you're on, that somebody took, that whoever was driving it took the turn too fast. Anyway, can you guys talk about how prepping has influenced your abilities to get through these medical issues? And how would you recommend, what kind of preps would you recommend for other people who might have medical issues?
Yeah, for me...
For us?
Go ahead, David.
Go ahead, Mark. No, go ahead, Mark.
For me, the best thing that I can do to combat my arthritis is to just keep moving, and you know, and make sure that I don't let too much weight pile up on me, and try to eat good and try to stay active, and make sure that I get my time in at the gym. And you know, of course, I recommend if they can't get to a gym, if that's not in your budget or there's not one nearby, you know, there's so many things you can do from home. YouTube's got great stuff for cardio and different things that you can do to just keep your body moving to where it doesn't have time to sit around and get stiff, which is the biggest problem with most people that have arthritis, and that's when it starts to affect your mobility, and then it starts to get you in this downward spiral where the less you do, the less you can do. So it's one of those things you just have to keep fighting. And another great thing that you can do on YouTube is cardio kickbox, and you can either watch it from your computer, or if you've got a smart TV or a Roku box or whatever, you can send it to your television and do the cardio kickbox routines, and that gets your heart going, stretches out your muscles, keeps your joints warmed up, and now you've got some minor self-defense moves there, where you know you're probably not going to be able to take on Bruce Lee, but it might be just enough to make you a harder target to where the predator is going to find somebody else that's a little bit easier target to pick on.
Yeah, I can imagine arthritis is a real morale challenge, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just picture myself with arthritis. I'd probably be kind of in a bad mood a lot.
Yeah, if you don't go to the gym, you will be.
But
you know, and then that's another thing with exercise. It gets your morale going as well. It gets all those endorphins going, and you just feel better.
Yeah. Do you have medication that you're stocking up on, or pain pills or anything?
Advil.
Okay. He said pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get the big bottles of Advil.
Yeah, Costco. Okay.
Hey, Preppers and Patriots, that's the end of the first half of my guest appearance with Southern Prepper One on today's Survival Podcast. Tune in next week for the rest of the show. God bless and happy prepping.
In the Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. A globalist conspiracy transpires by way of a false flag attack against America's energy infrastructure. Noah and Cassandra Parker witness a complete economic meltdown, which is intentionally triggered by the event. The assault is blamed on patriots and Christians who are rounded up into detention centers across the country. Noah and his friends must take action to prepare for the meltdown and defend against the totalitarian regime, which is gunning for their freedom and, quite possibly, their very lives. Get your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution for Kindle, paperback or audio edition at Amazon.com today.